Welcome back to a special edition of the Business of Government Hour, a conversation with authors, exploring ideas for improving government effectiveness with Professor Bob Bain, author of The Performance Stat Potential, a leadership strategy for producing results. So, Bob, why is it critical for a leadership team pursuing a stat strategy to start with specifying and defining their purpose? And what's the difference between a goal and a target?
Okay. If we don't have some sort of purpose, keep New York City safe, which was the original one, and pretty straightforward because most people prefer a safer city than a less safe city. And so there wasn't a lot of debate about the macro purpose. There was debate about whether cops could do anything about it. And there was basically a general consensus that cops didn't know what to do about crime. That if you called up and told the police that somebody committed a crime and you could give them some evidence, they would go arrest that person. But otherwise, they didn't have any impact. And Bratton said, no, cops count. We're going to get this done. We are going to reduce crime. And so he not only said that, but he set a target. I'm going to reduce crime by 10% the first year. We're going to do it by 25% over 2 years. And we're going to do it by 40% over 3 years. Noticing he's not telling somebody else what to do. He's holding himself accountable for that outcome. So if you don't have a purpose, then you can do whatever you want, and I can do whatever we want, and we're all very happy. Leadership responsibility is to set out what the purpose is we're trying to accomplish.
And the second part of my question, you make a good distinction between in this whole effort, if you have a goal versus a target, the target is less vague, right? I mean, is that correct?
Yeah. People use the word goal. We should have goals, okay? Now, a goal could be we should create international peace and harmony, or a goal should be we will cut crime by 10% this year. Now, notice that we can know whether New York City cut crime by 10%. We have a really hard time judging how much international peace and harmony got created. And so the important distinction about a target is something to be completed, something specific to be completed by a particular time and which we can generally all agree whether we did it or not. That there's some way to determine whether it was done. It might be counting number of crimes or it could be getting a project up, but it's something that's got a specific result to be produced by a specific time. That's a target.
Okay. And Bob, you mentioned a term, performance deficit. What is that? And how can an organization identify key performance deficits?
Okay. So a performance deficit, at least as I use the phrase, is something along the value chain from inputs to activities and processes to outputs to outcomes that isn't quite working right, and we need to fix it. And it could be very early in the value chain. If we fix this, things will get better. And in fact, in a lot of organizations, what we do early in the value chain is much more critical because it affects everything else. And so we have to think about what performance deficit we need to fix next. I will give you a simple example. It doesn't come from a particular example of performance step, but nevertheless illustrates it very clearly in an example that everybody can understand. This is Lowell, Massachusetts. It's an old mill town. The mills have long since gone away. The old buildings are occupied by immigrants. And I have told you probably enough for you to figure out what the test scores for the elementary and secondary schools are in this city. So what did the city decide to do? It decided that one of its key performance deficits was its truancy problem. Too many kids weren't in school. So they organized not just the schools and not just the police, but community organizations, parents, to get the kids in school. Some people had the responsibility for calling up well-known truants at 6 o'clock in the morning to get them out of bed and get them to school. So eventually they get kids into school, and as time goes on, with obviously a lag, test scores start going up. Now, the theory behind this isn't too complicated. Everybody who heard this story has figured it out. If the kids aren't in school, they aren't going to learn, or to the extent that they've learned anything, it's not what we want them to learn, but exactly what we don't want them to learn. So that's an example of a performance deficit that needs to be fixed. All organizations have them. It might be something early in the production process for a manufacturing firm. It might be something in the marketing strategy for a manufacturing firm. Everybody has these things that need to be fixed. And it's a leadership choice to identify them and decide which one to be fixed next.
And then employ the performance stat.
Yeah. And then get people to concentrate on that, set the target for it, hold the meetings, identify what progress we've made and what problems we still have to overcome. And then overcoming those problems by reporting back at the frequent integrated meetings that we're holding.
So switching gears just a little bit, giving more context, Bob, how does performance measurement differ from performance management? And why do you see these terms used so interchangeably?
I cannot answer why they're used interchangeably. That's other people do. But it's clear that people talk about, well, we'll do performance measurement, we'll get the measures, and then wonderful things will happen. And, you know, I don't see that because the measures just sort of sit there until somebody's responsible for making a change in some particular measure, whether it's truancy or whether it's crime or whether it's child protection or whether it's filling the potholes. Somebody's got to be responsible for getting it done. That's, again, why I use the phrase performance leadership, because I found too many people use the phrase performance management. But if you look at what they're really talking about, they're only talking about the measurement. They haven't figured out how to manage this.
So, Bob, in reading your book, you have to, in order to prove performance, data is necessary. And you point out the search for data is driven by two needs. What are they and why? And then what are some of the questions a leadership team pursuing a stat strategy would want their analytical staff to ask?
Well, obviously, one reason for getting data is to analyze what our current level of performance is. Answer the question, how well are we doing? Another reason, however, that is often neglected is to use the data to motivate people to improve performance. Obviously, an organization that has multiple subunits, each unit doing the same thing, whether it's a police department or a series of welfare departments or whatever, one of the motivational uses of the data is to compare different organizations. Your organization's doing better than mine. Why is that? Now, I will, of course, try to explain that my organization is different. That's the standard all-purpose bureaucratic excuse. You don't understand. We're different. But if the organization is large, if it's like New York City, which 20 years ago had 76 precincts. Today it has 77. You have 76 precincts. I can't get away with that excuse because there's another precinct commander that's got the same type of problem that I have. And if she or he is doing better than me, I can't get away with the excuse. So the analytical part is trying to learn and make the improved decisions. The motivational part, which people tend to forget about. I mean, I've really been struck of the discussion of performance measurement almost always ignores the question of motivation and instead focuses on how do we make better decisions. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But if we make better decisions and nobody does anything about it, it's not very, very helpful.
So, Bob, when preparing for a performance stat meeting, what are some of the advantages of not sharing the topics or specific questions that are going to be posed to the agency leader who's going to appear? And what's the drawback of doing that? And how do you avoid the gotcha game that some people have criticized these meetings to be?
Yeah, there's always this question of how much should we tell the reporting unit? Okay, should we tell them what we know and what the questions are going to be, or should we not? The theory behind not telling them is, hey, we got the data from them. The only way we got the data was to ask them to report what they were doing. And so they should know it as well as we do. Why haven't they looked at it? The second argument is that if we tell them what the questions are, they'll ignore all the ones that we haven't told them about. But if they don't know what the questions are, they're going to have to be prepared to understand their entire organization. You know, it's in my business, it would be like, oh, I'm going to tell you what questions are going to be on the final exam. The other side of it is, look, if the agency is doesn't know what the questions are, it's going to spend all its time trying to understand what the questions are so that it doesn't spend its time doing something else. I think one of the issues is, how do you make this not some special add-on activity, but part of the regular rhyme and rhythm of what the organization does? And if that's the case, then people should be analyzing their own data. It's not just that the central performance staff, analytics staff, is analyzing data. Whether it's a precinct commanders or sanitation units or whatever, they have to know what their data tells them and be able to say, oh, well, we've got this problem, we've identified it, and here's what our strategy is to fix it. But it's an ongoing tension. Obviously, the reporting agencies, reporting units would love to be told what the questions are. It makes their life a lot easier. But it may be that there are a lot of issues that ought to come up at the meeting, not just two.
So, Bob, how can a performance stat meeting or strategy facilitate the creation of, say, a learning organization? And to what extent do these meetings, performance stat meetings that we've talked about, represent a learning opportunity for the organization?
Unfortunately, the way the world has learned most about CompStat, let alone any of the other versions, is by watching The Wire, where the dominant mode of performance is to beat up aggressively on any slightly unperforming precinct commander or other cop. There's no learning going on there. But in fact, we want people to understand what they're doing, why they're doing it, how it's working, and be able to tell other schools or other sanitation units or other precincts or whatever, how they're getting it done. And it just depends on how the leadership team chooses to run the meeting. Are they giving people the opportunity not only to have to explain why something isn't working, but also to explain why something is, particularly in front of their peers, so the rest of their peers can try to adapt the same strategy to their own organization.
So, Bob, would you elaborate on the importance of carrying out feedback and follow-up in order to contribute to the success of any performance stat effort? And given your research and your experience, what's the best way to communicate the substance of each meeting throughout the organization?
On the feedback question, it really helps to have visited more than one meeting. If you go to one meeting, all you see is this and you don't know what went before. I often say it's like pick somebody giving you a novel and saying, please read pages 95 to 110 and tell me what's going on. You have no idea what went before. And the same is true when you show up at one meeting. You don't know who the people are. The jargon is whizzing over your head, and you're trying to figure out what's going on. In fact, however, a well-run meeting, people are referencing what came at the last meeting and the meeting a month ago and the meeting 6 months ago, because it's not just, oh, what should we worry about now? There's a common set of themes about what results we're trying to produce, what our performance deficits are, what our targets are, and how well we're doing against those. So specific people have to be able to explain how this relates to what happened before. And the dilemma for a visitor, and I know it was true for me the first time I go to almost any of these examples, I can't figure out what's going on because I don't know the history. But if I go back the second time and I see the same organizations again, the same subunits again, I will recognize the continuity. If, however, you let the agency, the reporting unit, set the agenda, they'll set a different agenda every time and there will be no continuity.
Given your research and what you, was there certain best practices or best way to communicate the outcomes or the discussion of that particular meeting to the general organization?
I think it depends on the nature of the organization and it depends upon the nature of the communication vehicles within the organization, okay? But there's lots of ways that it happens. Obviously, the leadership of the unit that's reporting is going to go back and say, okay, we did pretty well on this thing, but we didn't do well on other things. I know a director of Baltimore's Department of Parks and Recreation, who said, I bring my full leadership team, 24 people, to the meetings because I want them to hear it straight from the mayor and the mayor's leadership team. I don't want them to think that I'm inventing this. And so that means that all of a sudden, I got 24 people in my organization who understand what the message is. And when they deal with their subordinates, when their staff, they will be conveying something that's similar to what I'm conveying and what the other units are conveying.
So, Bob, drawing on your experience and research, have any of these performance stats really worked? And can you attribute an improved results to performance stat efforts?
No. You know, there's no...
Surprising answer.
There's no there's no controlled experiment you run. New York would be a perfect place. We will run CompStat for 38 precincts, and we will not run CompStat for 38 other precincts and see what happens. Well, there's a couple problems with that. One is that crime isn't limited to a particular precinct. You know, the crooks don't notice that there's a precinct boundary drawn down the middle of the street, and therefore we will commit crimes here rather than there. The more important thing is, though, because this is an idea, you can't deny it to people. You're on the treatment group and you're going to CompStat and I'm not. But I've observed that you're doing some things. And I say, well, I think I'm as good as Michael. Why can't I do that too? And so you can't run the standard controlled experiment. And so what I've done here is tried to look at things that we know from behavioral literature, both individual behavior and organizational behavior, about how people behave under certain circumstances. And so my list of leadership behaviors is based on both what I observe people doing, how people reacted, but also what we know about human and organizational psychology.
What are the core leadership principles and key operational components of this leadership strategy? We will explore this question and so much more when our special edition of the Business of Government Hour, A Conversation with Authors, returns.